الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله وصحبه وسلم. اللهم زدنا علما، أسأل الله تعالى أن يعلمنا ما ينفعنا وينفعنا بما علمنا وزدنا علما. أما بعد، respected brothers in Islam, I welcome you to tonight's درس. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Tonight we'll be speaking about the fiqh of business, or in the chapter of the science of buying and selling. And the topic for tonight is regarding a few hadith regarding the sale of butter or oil that a mouse has fallen into, and also regarding the selling and buying of cats and dogs, and also regarding a hadith related to the freeing of a slave. Now, these two subjects, they might seem very strange or awkward, that such as a topic of whether a mouse fell in the butter or buying and selling dogs, these issues actually show how Islam has studied and given such a complete way of life and the complete Sharia that it encompasses every aspect of life, even in buying and selling, and even in how to sell things that might have become impure due to some impurity falling in them. Is it allowed to sell it or not? Even that Islam explains and gives the ruling on whether we're allowed to sell something impure to another person. Such detail and such completion of this religion, it hasn't left any aspect without giving us guidance, without giving us rulings on it. So for the first hadith tonight, inshallah, the hadith was narrated by Jabir, may Allah be pleased with him, who said, أَعْتَقَ رَجُلٌ مِنَّا عَبْدًا لَهُ عَنْ دُبُرٍ وَلَمْ يَكُنْ لَهُ مَالٌ غَيْرُهُ فَدَعَى بِهِ النَّبِي صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمَ فَبَاعَهُ. Hadith muttafaqun alayh. Jabir, one of the Sahaba, he narrates that there was a man in the time of the Prophet ﷺ. He had a slave, and he freed the slave, or he authorized that when he dies, his slave will become a free person. And then when the man died, the Prophet ﷺ called for that slave, and he brought him back, and he sold the slave to another person. He sold the slave to another person and kept the money, and he paid off the debts of that person who had passed away. Let me explain the hadith again. A man, he wanted to free a slave, so he authorized that the slave will be free the moment he dies. However, when the person died, the Prophet ﷺ didn't allow the slave to go free. He took him and sold him to a person. That's the text of the hadith. So when a person, they read this hadith, first of all, they wonder, why did the Prophet ﷺ take this person who was supposed to be freed and then sell him to a person after the death of his owner? But when we read the end of the hadith, it gives us some indication. It says, that man who died, he had no other wealth. And in another narration, it says that he owed money, he was in debt. He was in debt. So, what was the reason? Why would the Prophet ﷺ take this man who was supposed to be free and then sell him and take that money? The other narrations, they make it clear that the man who died, he had debts. A person who dies and he's in debt, the scholars say that he is enchained in his grave. He is held in his grave due to those debts. So the man who wanted to free a slave, he himself was not free. He was enchained by his debts that he had when he died. How can he free somebody else who, when he himself was not free? So the Prophet ﷺ, he took the slave, he sold him, and then he took the money from the price of the slave and paid off the debts of that man. He paid off the debts of that man. So a couple points here to take note of. One is that Islam has taken every means to enjoin freedom on mankind, on people. It has every intention of making people free. And it has made war against slavery by closing all the doors to making slaves. In other places, they make slaves by kidnapping them, taking anybody of a certain race, a certain culture, or living in a certain land, they kidnap them and make them slaves. This is not allowed in Islam. The only door it left open for slavery is through the battlefield, through the jihad fi sabilillah. That's the only way that people could become slaves. Not because they're a race, not because they were kidnapped from their homeland, not because of the king wanted to enslave certain people. It closed all these doors. Not because of debt that he owes. These are not allowed to make them slaves. Only on the battlefield, those who oppose the Islam, the propagation of Islam, they're allowed to be made slaves. And then it opened every door to free the slaves by saying that the slave should be freed as a good deed by paying your zakat. You can use the zakat to free the slave. You must free a slave if you break an oath. If you broke your fast during the day in Ramadan, you have to free a slave. All of these things, it opened the doors to free the slaves. So when we look at Islam, we see how Islam, it took an approach to end slavery and cause freedom for people. But in this hadith, what we see is that the danger of people who are in debt, that if they have to pay off their debt before they can give sadaqah. Can somebody who owes somebody money that's currently due, should he go and give sadaqah in the way of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Is it allowed for him to do that? He has a debt that's owed from him. So how can he go and give charity when he hasn't given his responsibility what is due first and foremost? So from this hadith we see a very important lesson, which is that the ruler of the Muslims, if somebody gave or wanted to free a slave after he died, and he knows that that person owes money, the ruler is upon him to take that slave and sell him and pay off the debts of the person. It's not allowed to give sadaqah, to give charity, when you have a responsibility first. That has to come first. Another interesting lesson, which is a very beautiful hadith, is that there are three things which the serious of them are serious and the joking of them are serious. These three matters that every Muslim should take seriously. One is divorce, two is marriage, and three is the freeing of a slave. If somebody's joking around and he says to his wife, "You're divorced," and then later on he says, "I was just joking. I didn't really want to divorce you." The scholars say, even if you're joking, it still counts as a divorce. You have divorced your wife. It's a serious matter. Joking around about divorce, you cannot take it back. Even if you're joking. Whether you're serious or joking, they're both serious. The same thing about marriage. Somebody says, "I marry you my daughter," and he says, "Yes, I accept." And then later on he says, "I was just joking. I didn't really want to marry your daughter. I didn't really want to give my daughter marriage." It already took place. Because these are serious things that count according to Islamic law. The third one is freeing a slave. The Shaykh here, he mentions the hadith in the time of the Prophet where there was two men, they were supposed to go out on a battle. And one of his friends, he came late. He was very late. So when he arrived, he said, "What happened?" He said, "When I was about to leave, my wife went into labor. So I waited for her to give birth. Then I came to you so we could go out together." So the man who came, his friend who was waiting for him, he said, "What did you have, a boy or a girl?" He said, "I had a girl." So he's joking around with him. He said, "Why don't you marry her to me? I want to, this is a joke." So the man said, "Okay, I accept. You're married to her." So many, many years later, when the girl grew up, the man that had asked for the marriage, he came to that man and he said, "Now it's time for your daughter. She grew up, and give me my wife." So the father, he said, "What do you mean? We were just joking. That was just a joke. I didn't really mean to wed her to you. Even she was just born." So they went to the Prophet ﷺ, and the Prophet ﷺ, he told the man who had gotten married to the girl when she was young, He said, you have no goodness in her. No good. Why are you going to take her? He acknowledged that it was his wife. But he said, how are you going to take her now from her family when there's a big difference in age and she doesn't want to be married to you, the family doesn't want it? How was the marriage relationship going to be? So the Prophet ﷺ, he acknowledged that even though the two friends were joking with each other, the marriage took place. See how strong these words are. This is showing you that the contract in Islam of marriage, of divorce, and of freeing of the slaves are very serious contracts. Even though they're just words that are said, they're very, very serious. So here the man, he freed the slave. He freed the slave, and then the Prophet ﷺ took him back after he passed away and made sure to pay off his debts first before he was able to give in charity. So this is one of the rulings that we look at in the chapter of sales, that when a person, they give a sadaqah, say they, when they pass away, and they said, I want to give this much in charity, but they have debts. Are the people who inherit from him, are they allowed to give the charity before paying off his debts? They have to pay off the debts first before they can give those things in charity. The next hadith, عن ميمونة رضي الله عنها, the wife of the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم, she said, أن فأرة وقعت في السمن فماتت فيه فسأل النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم عنها فقال فسئل النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم عنها فقال ألقوها وما حولها وكلوه رواه بخاري. So we have another hadith of the Prophet ﷺ in the chapter of sail, that if a mouse falls into some butter that is solidified, what should one do with it? The Prophet ﷺ said, throw away the mouse and whatever is around it. Whatever is around it, the solid part, throw it away, and the rest you can benefit from and eat from it. So here the reason this hadith is mentioned in the chapter of sale is there's the question of when you have something that became impure. Say a mouse fell in the butter and it was a dead mouse. The dead mouse is najis. So that butter became najis. Is it allowed to sell it or not? Do we have to throw it away? Or can you sell it to somebody? Maybe he's not going to eat it, but he's going to use it to use, sometimes they use butter or fat to put it on ships, for example, or to put it in a candle, to burn the candle. Can you sell it and get rid of it, even though it's impure and not edible? This is the reason why the scholar, he brought the hadith here. But a very interesting story before we talk about that the mouse, few things about the mouse. One is that some of the scholars, they talk about the history of the mouse. And they say, some of them say that all the mice that exist, or some of them, there was a nation of the Bani Israel, the Yahud. And because of the sins that they did, Allah changed them, transformed them into mice. He transformed those Bani Israel into the mice. And some ulama say that those mice that were transformed, they still exist to this day. They've been reproducing, they still exist. But not all the mice are from that tribe of the Bani Israel. Some of them are the original mice that Allah created. Some of them, they were from a tribe of Bani Israel that disobeyed Allah, and he cursed them by changing them into mice. And the interesting thing is, they say, if you want to know if it was a real mouse or one that was a descendant of that tribe of Bani Israel, how do you know? Oh, actually, they say you give it camel's milk. Camel's milk or camel's meat, because the Bani Israel, the Yahud, they don't eat camel, because the camel has a split hoof. They say it's not allowed to eat any animal that has a hoof that is split. So if you try to give it the camel's milk or the camel's meat, the mouse will not touch it if it's from those descendants. If it's from the regular mouse, he'll drink it, he'll eat it. This is what the scholars mentioned, that there was an ummah that was transformed into mouse. And even there was an ummah, you read this in the Quran, that because they went against the Sabbath, he changed them into apes and Khanazir, and pigs. And they were transformed into that state. And some of the ulama say they're still alive, this reproducing, but other ulama say they only lived 3 days after the transformation, then all of them died after that. After the sign of Allah became manifest, that Allah showed the punishment for what they did, when the people saw that, and the sign was clear, then He caused them to die. Because the goal was to show the people the punishment for going against the commandments of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So that's actually in the history of the mouse you find this. Another interesting thing about the mouse. The mouse in Arabic is called the fawasiqa or fasiqa. And fasiqa in Arabic, as you know, it means sinner. But literally, linguistically, fasiqa, it means to go away or go towards the path of evil. So why is a mouse called a fasiqa, an evildoer, basically? The scholars, they say the mouse, one of the very interesting things about the mouse is that the Prophet ﷺ actually said, cover up the containers and tie up the water skins and close the doors and put out the candles. Put out the candles. And he said the reason for it is because the mouse will burn the house on top of its people. This is one of the hadith of the Prophet, a very amazing hadith. The mouse will cause the house to burn on its people. How is this? The mouse, when she, in the old days, they used to have candles that were burning from oil. They put oil inside the cup and put a wick inside the oil and light the wick and it would flow inside. The mouse would come, if you leave the candle at night, the mouse, he wants to drink the oil, lick the oil. But when she comes and sees the oil, sees the fire, she's scared of the fire, she doesn't want to get burned. So actually what they would do, the mouse would take her tail and take the wick and throw it down. Take it out from the oil. They have this ability to use the tail to remove the wick and throw it. And if they throw the wick on cloth or on carpet or furniture, it will burn. And burn the whole house on top of people. And this has actually happened in the past. So the Prophet ﷺ, he warned about the mouse. He said, put out the candle, because the mouse, she burns the house on top of people. They're so clever, actually, the mouse. She'll take the, with her tail, take out the wick and throw it down so she can drink the oil. And she'll burn the whole house on top of the people. So the Prophet ﷺ, what did he say? He said, put out the candles. The rest of the hadith, he said, cover up the containers. When a person, before they go to bed at night, he commanded to cover the containers. And he said in another hadith, because in one night out of the year, there's a disease that will descend inside of that container and make it diseased. And he even said in some hadith, if you don't have a cover, put a stick over it and say Bismillah, and that will protect it. SubhanAllah, this, if we look at it today, and what they know about airborne diseases, how it doesn't come in every place, but one night out of the year, as the Prophet ﷺ, he said, it will descend in the food, in the container, and make it diseased. SubhanAllah, he said this 1400 years ago. And then the Prophet ﷺ, he said, وَأَوْكُ السِّقَى. And he said, tie up the water containers. Or any containers that have water inside, close it up, tie it up. Why did he say that? Because the containers, they're cold. And especially in hot climates, the insects, spiders, and scorpions, they try to go inside a cool place, moist place. So a scorpion, he might go inside the water container, and then somebody, he drinks it, it'll go right inside his mouth and poison him, or harm him, or kill him, spider or scorpion. This actually happened to some people. So he taught us, whenever you take water out from a container, pour it in a cup. Don't drink from it directly, because there might be something inside of that container. So he said, أَوْكُوا السِّقَى وَأَغْلِقُوا الْبَابَ, and close the door. So subhanAllah, you see the beautiful advice of the Prophet ﷺ to save us from diseases. And perhaps they'll discover soon, why did he say put a stick and say Bismillah? Even that has a way of protecting from harm. Also the Prophet ﷺ, when we talk about the mouse, the mouse, he was giving us the advice on how to deal with the mouse if he falls in the butter. And this is something very common. The mouse, they hide behind places, especially they go in storage places, and they reproduce very quickly. So the mouse falling in the butter is very common. And the Prophet ﷺ, he gave us the advice on how to deal with it. There's another hadith he taught us about if the fly falls inside of the drink. The fly, if it falls inside of the drink, the Prophet ﷺ, he said, dip it inside of the container and then take it out. And then you can drink it or throw it away. Now this is very amazing as well. That the Prophet ﷺ, he said, do not take the fly out and drink it. He said, dip it inside, then take it out and drink it. And he said the reason why. He said, in one of the wings of the fly is disease, and the other wing has the cure for the disease. When he falls in the water, he protects himself with the diseased wing. And so if you dip him in, the wing with the cure on it will cancel out or cure the diseases that are inside that came from the other wing. Now something very amazing, something very interesting, is that the scholars of medicine, they studied this concept of the fly having the cure, or they studied the fly itself. And what they found recently, and this is agreed upon in the field of medicine, is that the fly has tubes in the back of his body. These tubes contain antibodies, antibacterial, antibiotic material. When you dip the fly in the fluid, these pustules, they burst, and the antibodies come out from the body of the fly, and they kill any of the bacteria that was carried on the fly. This is something the researchers, they found, that the fly, he contains, or he has antibodies in his body against the diseases that he carries. He carries the disease and he carries the cure inside of himself. This has been proven through research. And actually, the sheikh, he said he was sitting with a researcher. He was an expert in the field of laboratories. He would research different diseases. So he had lunch with him. He had the opportunity to have lunch with him one day. So he was sitting and they were drinking tea, and a fly fell inside the cup, the teacup. So the sheikh, he said, this is an opportunity for me to give dawah or to talk to this doctor. He had an advanced degree in medical research. He said, let me teach him something about the sunnah. So he dipped the fly in the tea and picked it, threw it out, and then drank the tea. So the laboratory scientist, he was shocked. He said, what are you doing? You're drinking this tea, you dip the fly inside? The sheikh said, قَالَ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ. The scientist, he said, قَالَ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ. Even in this, the Prophet ﷺ, he said everything, قَالَ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ, even in how to drink. If the fly dips inside, you dip it in, take it out. The sheikh said, yes. You know what he said? He said, if the fly falls in your drink, dip it in, and then take it out, because one wing has a disease, and the other wing has the cure. So the scientist, he said, really? That hadith is true. And the sheikh said, how do you know it's true? He said, I did my research, my doctoral work in Germany. And it was during World War II. We ran out of money, so I had to work in a kitchen. To support myself. And we had other students with us who were studying medicine at the time. And we were discussing with each other about some research that we had, that had become new, or that had been discovered at that time. He said the research said, and he had seen it, they had seen it in their university, that they had discovered that the fly, they had a new antibacterial medicine they took from the body of a fly. Basically, the way they discovered it is that the soldiers that were in the trenches, when they got injured, they found that the ones that the flies had put larvae on their injury, they actually healed faster than the ones that didn't have, that just kept it covered. The flies, they had some beneficial effect on bringing the cure to the injured people in the trenches. They used the flies, they would expose it to the flies, and that injury would actually heal faster than the ones that didn't have any exposure to the flies. And they found the reason for that. They were trying to discover why. What causes the injury, the wound, to heal faster? Because the fly inside of it, it has antibacterial properties. And that fly would cause them to heal faster. So the Prophet ﷺ, he was teaching us something that was actually very miraculous. Very, very miraculous at that time. They discovered that the antibiotic properties of the fly itself. And so that researcher, he understood the hadith of the Prophet ﷺ. He concurred that this is a true hadith. And so the Prophet ﷺ, he taught us such amazing things even in the everyday aspects of our life. Now, coming back to the hadith of the mouse, if it fell inside of the butter, the Prophet ﷺ said, if it fell inside, then remove the mouse and what is around it, as long as it's solid butter, and that suffices. Then the scholars, they asked, how much do you have to remove around it? 1 centimeter, 2 centimeters, 1 hand span? Some of them, they said 1 centimeter is enough. Some said a whole hand span, remove all of it. Actually, the correct answer that, or perhaps the correct answer is that it depends on how solid the material is. If it's very solid, then even 1 centimeter is more than enough. The impurity would not spread. But if it's not solid, if it's still liquidy, but not pure liquid, but less solid, then the impurity might spread more. You have to remove more of it. What if the mouse just drinks from the butter, or eats a little bit from it? Does the whole butter have to be thrown away? The scholars say that it doesn't, because the mouse, he's only impure when he dies. Animals in general, when they're alive, they're still pure. They're still pure. Even the donkey, where the scholars say the donkey is impure, but the Prophet ﷺ used to ride on the back of a donkey when without any saddle, and the donkey, he sweats. So if he's impure, then the impurity would have went to the body of the Prophet ﷺ. Of course, he would never do that. So they say life, when something's alive, he's pure, except for a few exceptions like the pig, some say the dog, and if he dies, everything is impure. Any animal that dies, it becomes impure, with the exception of course, human being. Human being never becomes impure. Allah says, لَقَدْ كَرَّمْنَا بَنِي آدَمَ. We have honored the children of Adam. Also, there's another narration that mentions about the hadith of the butter, if the mouse falls in, and it says, if it is wet, if the butter is liquid, he said, do not go near it. Do not go near it. If the mouse, he falls in the butter and he dies, and if it's liquid, he said, do not go near it. So here the scholars say, what does it mean, don't go near it? Does it mean don't drink, don't eat it? Or does it mean just get rid of it completely, dump it out? Or if does it mean don't eat it, but you can still sell it to somebody, they can benefit from it, because that fat, they can use it on the boats or for candles. So the strongest view Allah knows best is what he meant is don't eat it. When he said don't go near it, you could still use it for other beneficial things. So something impure, can we still sell it? Generally speaking, the Prophet said that alcohol, for example, which is impure, we cannot sell it at all. We cannot sell it, we cannot consume it. But something that was pure and then it became impure, they say that you can still sell it, somebody can benefit it in another way, such as by using it for a candle and other things. Another aspect of this hadith, inshallah, is that what if a mouse or an animal fell in a large body? Not a small cup where small amount of fluid, the Prophet said throw it away. But what if you had a big, large container and a mouse fell in it, or an animal fell in it? A well, say, for example. The animal falls inside. The scholars, they say that if it's a large body of water, then it doesn't carry impurity. Even if an impure animal fell inside of it, since it's so large that the impurity will dissipate, as long as the body of water didn't change in its qualities, then it remains pure. So it's only when you're dealing with a small amount. The last hadith for tonight, and this is also a very interesting hadith, inshallah ta'ala, is regarding the dog and the cat. The dog and the cat. The Prophet ﷺ, it was narrated that the سَأَلْتُ جَابِرًا رَضِي اللَّهُ عَنْهُ عَنْ ثَمَنَ السَّنُّورِ وَالْكَلْبِ فَقَالَ زَجَرَ النَّبِيُّ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمَ عَنْ ذَلِكَ. Abi Zubair, he says, I asked Jabir about selling the dog and the cat. Can I sell it? Can I profit from it? Take a profit. And he said, the Prophet ﷺ, زَجَرَ, he strongly forbade that. And then in another narration it says, except the dog used for the hunting. The dog that is used for the hunting. So here we have two animals, the cat and the dog. The cat is actually a pure animal, very, very clean animal. And its saliva, if it licks or eats from something, it's pure. Even if it drinks from the water, there's no harm in drinking from that water. It does not make it impure. There were some ulama from the tabi'een, some small, very weak view, they said the cat is like the dog. You have to wash 7 times, 1 time with dirt, if he licks from the container. But that's not the strongest view. The correct view is that the cat, it will not make anything impure. And actually, if you observe the cat, it's a very, very clean animal. It cleans itself whenever it eats. When it uses the bathroom, as you can say, he covers it up and makes sure everything is clean. Even they're very, very clean animals. But as for the dog, there's a few interesting rulings about the dog. One is that the dog, there's some hadith that says kill the dogs. Some hadith that say that. Some hadith that says do not kill the dog. Or some narration. In some hadith it says, whoever keeps a dog as a pet, then he loses two mountains of good deeds every day. And then there's some hadith that forbid the selling or the price of the dog. So, killing the dog. Of course, if somebody reads this hadith out of context, they get the wrong idea. This is why it's important to look at what the ulama say. Killing the dog was when there was a time when there was many vicious and harmful dogs harming the Muslims. So the Prophet ﷺ, he commanded to kill those dogs that were attacking and harming the Muslims. When those dogs, they were no longer harming the Muslims, he said, do not kill the dog. So that is what the hadith says. When you read, the Prophet ﷺ said, commanded killing the dog and killing the scorpion and the snake. Doesn't mean all the dogs. Those ones that were harmful. And in fact, some of the scholars, when there was the wild dogs were getting too much in number, the people took them and put them in the desert. And the dogs, they died. Out of, they didn't have food. So the scholars, they said, the best thing to do is not to take the dogs and kill them in the desert, but separate the male and the female. So then they don't reproduce, and on their own they'll finish off, or they won't be a harm to people. So it's not an open statement to kill the dogs. As for keeping the dog as a pet, the Prophet ﷺ, he forbade keeping any dog as a pet, except for 3 reasons. One is as a guard, to guard the property. Number 2 is the shepherd dog. Dogs are actually very intelligent. They see a sheep wandering away, they'll run and bring the sheep back to the group. Even if there's a cow, he had a rope, some of the dogs are so intelligent, they'll take the rope and bring the animal back to the owner. They're very, very intelligent and useful for the farmer.
Faithful too.
Very faithful. See how he doesn't run away, he actually brings you your animals back to you. And number 3, it's allowed to keep the dog or keep a dog as a pet for hunting. The dog is very useful in catching the animals. Whoever keeps a dog for other than these 3 reasons, then he loses every day 2 qirat, 2 mountains of good deeds. So here the question is, what does it mean 2 mountains of good deeds? Some scholars say that some people don't even have 1 mountain of good deeds. How is he going to lose 2 mountains of good deeds? Maybe he doesn't have any. So they said, what it means is that if you divided all the good deeds of a person, he would lose a large amount of them. From the daytime and from the nighttime. From his acts of worship, his ibadah, he would lose out on those good deeds, especially because he doesn't have the tahara, etc. So he would lose out on his good deeds that he did in the daytime and at the nighttime. Qiratan, the 2 mountains of good deeds. And also, the scholars, they say that the dog, is it allowed to sell the dog? And some ulama said, it's not allowed to sell the dog because it has no benefit, but the dog that has a benefit, like the hunting dog, the guard dog, and the shepherd dog, you can sell. This is the view of Abu Hanifa, rahimahullah. He said, if there's a benefit, then you're allowed to profit and sell the dog. If you have a dog he reproduces, a hunting dog, you can sell it. A shepherd dog, you can sell it. A guard dog, no problem, you can sell it. Some of the ulama, they felt all dogs are not allowed to sell. And also, what about the cat? The price of the cat, they say it's makruh. It's haram to sell the dog, it's not allowed, unless for those 3, according to the majority. For the cat, they say selling the cat, it's disliked. It's not completely haram, but there's some dislike, or it's makruh, a very strong karaha, a very strong dislike to sell the price of the cat. The last thing for today, and this is very, very amazing, and another miraculous hadith. Imam Shawkani, there's a ruling of Imam Malik about the dog. Imam Malik, he says the dog is tahir, it's pure. And he said the saliva of the dog is pure. It's pure, but you still have to wash it 7 times, 1 time with dirt. And why did Imam Malik say that? He said that it's for medical reason, for medical benefit. Imam Malik, he lived, when did he live? Around 80 after the Hijrah of the Prophet. Very, very long time, 13 centuries ago. Listen to what he said. He said the Prophet ﷺ commanded washing the saliva of the dog from a container 7 times, 1 time with dirt, not because it's an impurity, but because there's a medical benefit in doing that. Today, the other ulama, they said that it's an impurity and you have to wash it, you have to remove it. But actually, the medical reason for that is, and the scholars now, the doctors today, they agree that the rabies that is carried in the mouth of a dog, it is not removed by washing it with water. It is not removed by washing it with water. It will only be removed by washing it or removing it with dirt and water. And the reason for that is that the rabies that is in the mouth of the dog, there's fluoride in the soil, a large percentage of fluoride in the soil. It kills the bacteria in the mouth of the dog. This is what they understand why the Prophet ﷺ commanded to use the turab, the dirt, because that the fluoride is similar to the chlorine, the chloride they use in water. Water has diseases, they put chloride in it, chlorine, kills the bacteria. Dirt itself, it carries fluoride in it. Now fluoride, it also kills bacteria. And it will kill the bacteria in the mouth of the dog, unlike water or anything else. It will not remove that bacteria, it will not kill it. So somebody, they look at the view of Imam Malik, and they are objective, they'll see that Imam Malik's view is probably the correct view. It's probably the correct view. And he has, his reasoning behind that is, why are we allowed to use a dog for hunting? And he holds the bird in his mouth, if his mouth is najis. Because if you drink the container, the bacteria will harm you. The bird, you're going to clean it and cook it, it will not harm you. So Imam Malik, he understood, he saw a reasoning that it wasn't a religious reason, it was more of a medical reason. And actually today, if we look at the current research, it seems to strengthen the view of Imam Malik. And finally, there's a question of, can one eat a dog? Can one eat a dog? Now, Imam Malik, when he said the dog is tahir, the other madhahib, the other students, they made fun of the group, they made fun of the Malikis, and they said, Maliki say you can eat a dog, because he said it's tahir. But he never said you can eat a dog, he just said that it's pure. But he didn't imply, see, they're saying he's implying you're allowed to eat it. Imam Malik and the ulama of the Maliki school, they don't say you're allowed to eat dog, they don't say that. They say it's pure, but it doesn't mean that, they don't mean that you're allowed to eat it. It just means that he's tahir. And the reason why he has to wash it is for a medical, beneficial reason. It's not allowed to eat the dog, according to the Malikis, or any of the other Imams, inshallah ta'ala. So this is the text for today, inshallah. And I hope it gave us some insight into the depth of the Islamic law and how it covered things. It's more than just a mouse fell in the oil or a fly fell in the water. It's actually great wisdom. Allah is the one who revealed this to the Prophet ﷺ. There's a lot of miraculous knowledge when in the hadith of the Prophet ﷺ, whether it's talking about disease going into a cup, or whether it's talking about a fly dipping it into the water, or whether it's talking about the bacteria in the mouth of a dog. Anybody who looks at these hadith, they will realize that the Prophet ﷺ was not speaking from his own desire. It was from the wahi, from the one who knows all things hidden and apparent, inshallah ta'ala. We ask Allah to make this knowledge beneficial to us and to the Ummah, inshallah. May Allah reward you. And if there's any questions or comments, you're welcome to add them here, inshallah ta'ala.
Birds?
Petting the bird is allowed, according to the vast majority of Ummah. Because there is a hadith that the Prophet ﷺ saw a little boy playing with a birdie, and he said, his name was Abu Umayr. He said, "Oh, Abu Umayr, what happened to your little birdie?" He was trying to cheer him up because his birdie died. So he didn't tell him when he saw him playing with a bird, "Let it go and fly away." So the vast majority of ulama, they said it's okay to keep a bird as long as one feeds it and gives it water properly. Some ulama, they said it's not good to keep a bird, because the bird, it loves to fly around and it likes freedom, and then you're locking it up in a little cage. So some of them, they had that view. But in light of the authentic hadith, that he saw the kid playing with a bird, he just smiled. He didn't tell him, don't keep the bird. So that seems to be the stronger view, that it's allowed to keep it and even buy the bird, pay for it, because there's some benefit one receives from keeping a bird, inshallah ta'ala. That's the strongest view of all. Alhamdulillah. Yes, Brother Ashraf, did you have a question or comment? Or, no? Alhamdulillah. Anybody else? Yes. Question, comment? Yeah? Anybody else have any questions? Huh?
No.
You said if you owe debt, you can't give sadaqah?
If you have a debt that's currently due, or somebody has a debt and he passes away, and he says, I want to give this money, or he gives this charity away, and he passes away with a debt on his shoulders. So whatever was given to the charity, the ruler of the Muslims, he is supposed to take it back from the charity and pay off his debts. That's the ruling on that issue. There's somebody...
Sorry, do you owe money?
Right. Right. If somebody has a debt that's not due immediately, you know, something that's due in the future, say he wants to go to Hajj, but he owes money on his house, or he owes money on his business, as long as it's not currently due, there's no harm in him traveling. If it is currently due, somebody, he needs the money, so you owe money to somebody, and he needs it, you should get his permission first. And say, can I go to Hajj, can I give this charity, etc. No. Inshallah.
Yeah, but mostly we owe, like, it's not due, it's...
Yes. When it comes to those large debts, actually, when you look at it from a more detailed perspective, it's not really, you don't really own the house, because you, each time you make a payment, you gain equity in the house. Actually, you share the house with the lender, the bank, whoever lends you, right? Because if you stop paying, they're going to take the house, or take the part that they sell it, and you get, you know, if you had equity in the house, they'll give you your equity and they take the rest. So it's actually more like you're buying part of the house until you pay it off. It's not really like a pure debt that you own the house and you owe them money right away. It's a little bit, if you look at it from that perspective. Same thing with a business. You know, somebody, they own a property or a business or a gas station, then the bank, they have they have a lien, basically, which means they're part owner of it. You're both owners in it. So you're not really purely in debt, but purely in debt is like somebody, he lent you some money and he needs the money back. Or the bank, you could say that the money that you currently owe, your bills that are outstanding, you could say that is your debt right now. So you should take care of that before giving charity, before going on Hajj. Inshallah. Very good question. Yes, Rahat.
You were talking about the mouth and the buzzer.
Yes.
And you clear it after some time, you know, like it's the same way, you know, mouth fell in the cooking oil. Because, you know, back home there, the shopkeeper, they have containers, open containers.
That's right, that's right. If it's liquid?
Yes, the cooking oil, like, you know, liquid. Yes.
If it's liquid, the Prophet said, don't go near it. And what they say by don't go near it means you can't eat it, can't consume it. But the majority say you can sell it for other benefits. You have the cooking oil and a mouse fell in it, then the owner, he can use it for candle, for example. It's not allowed to go use it after that, if it's liquid.
Okay.
If it's solid, he said, remove around it and use it. If it's liquid, he said, don't go near it. So that means you can, and what they said, don't go near it, doesn't mean don't go near it, don't use it for candles, don't use it for... No. It only means don't eat it. But you can use it for other purposes. That's the strongest view. Some of them said don't go near it, means dump it out. But the strongest view, it means don't consume it. And another thing we didn't bring up, what if a different animal falls in, not a mouse? What if a cat or something else? They all come under the same room. It's not the mouse. Anything with life in it, if it falls in it, sometimes there's big mice, rat, you know, chipmunk, different kinds of animals. They all have the same hook, the same movement. Not just the animal, it's any animal that has life in it. If it's solid, remove it. If it's liquid, don't use it for food after that. Because if it's dead, if it's alive, you take it out, there's no harm. Because it's not impure when it's alive. It becomes impure when he dies. Then the body becomes najis when he falls in. So that's a very good point. And also, if it's not just butter, any other kind of food that's liquidy, if it falls in it, you have to throw it out. What about insects? Insects that don't have flowing blood, they're not impure, even if they die. So if an insect fell inside of it, like a spider or an ant or a bee, and it died inside of it, there's no harm. Just throw it out. If the fly fell inside of it, what do we do?
Dip it
in and take it out. MashaAllah. Jazakallah khairan. May Allah reward you, inshallah. Any other questions? May Allah bless the day, inshallah.
When you explain the last thing, the lending thing, so, but in the first place, it's not allowed, lending.
If it's, that's true. So I'm assuming the brothers, they took it out already.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it was taken from a bank or a business or...
In the first place, it's not allowed.
Yeah. Interesting.
Even though it's a lender and stuff like that, you explain that half an hour, so you don't even own that.
Yeah, because they're charging the river.
So that's first thing is allowed.
Correct way to do it is the Islamic thing.
So you get
the funding.
You need to get one in America. We have all over the world, you know?
I don't
in Middle East.
Starting out, inshallah, there's a few groups, a few people that do it for housing, not for business.
Oh, the housing, yeah.
HSBC is doing it now, but I don't know if they offer it here in the US. HSBC?
They have a rebuffery.
HSBC?
I don't know what the HSBC is. It's in Dallas.
HSBC, they have a Sharia banking division.
But yeah.
Very, you know, often all kinds of halal, loans. Are much better than the
Mashallah, I hope we get it over in America because Muslims, 7 million Muslims, mashallah, they need houses and stuff.
Yeah.
Nobody has all that kind of money,
So
we need Islamic banking over here,
For the house, also, most of them, they say it's not allowed to take the loan for the house. Some of them, they say if you have a big family and you are in desperate need to get the house and, you can take a personal loan only for your own house, basic house, not get a big mansion, basic house, pay it off as quickly as you can.
Yeah, inshallah.
There's some leeway in that, some of the elements
but,
of that.
But Islamic banking is fine.
Islamic banking is halal.
Even though like the companies over here, I will get you the names, I forgot, there's one, the Riba Free. Remember? Or there's a couple.
Right.
So,
guidance financing
and all that.
Those are much better. Much better because they have ulama involved. They're trying to.
And they have studied the contract and everything. Some people say, you grabbing the air from this side or that side.
No.
I said, no, it's not like that. It's a, it's like just buying the chicken from here or going to Dallas, Zabiha.
What is
the difference?
Same animal.
It's just the processing. The processing is different.
That's true.
We pay for the processing.
And
the
somebody
Muslim
says in the name of Fir'aun or the name of Allah, big difference.
But there's
a real difference too. Because the riba system, the way the riba system works is based on exploitation of people. Because it forces them to pay more and more and more.
Yeah.
When you do the La Riba or the guidance finance, they're not allowed Islamically. They cannot charge you late fee.
Yeah.
If they're charging you late fee, they're doing something against Islamic law.
Yeah, because you're right.
You're an equal partner with them. If you're on equal ground. Riba is based on exploiting the poor and the weak.
Yeah.
They're by the rich. They have the upper hand. But here you agree in the beginning of the contract, I'm going to pay you whatever amount for the house, and at the end of the contract you cannot pay any more than that.
Yes.
If you pay more than that, they're charging riba.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot do that. You agree in the beginning, and that's it.
Yeah, that's it.
The way they work over here, they make it sweet.
Yeah.
Like, oh, buy the house, only this much every
After
month.
After 10 years, the balance is still there.
Yeah.
You know, one I know somebody who bought a house of 124, and after 10 years, his balance was like 90 something. 10 years, so how much riba they've been charging everybody is making payment, 1,230 something.
Sometimes they beg you to, you're lucky if they let you out of the contract.
And we calculated, we said 10 years you already paid $125,000 in the rent and everything, in riba. So that's why,
It's a system.
The
riba system is what Allah has forbidden. The whole system that works against the Islamic concept of loaning should not be a means of profit. Loaning should be a charitable, should be do it
for the profit.
Lending should not be a means of profit.
Okay. Lending, so how the Islamic bank works?
Islamic
they have to make
means you're doing a business deal.
With business
it's
deal with them,
You're equal partners in a business. Lending the money
and
they have to buy the house.
Okay.
They cannot give you the money
and
then you buy the house and they say you pay us back, then that's riba. The bank has to buy the house and take possession of it.
Okay.
Then they resell it to you.
Okay.
At the price you and them agree with.
Okay.
Same price, less, more. Based on whatever you agree on. But the bank, they cannot. The Islamic bank, they cannot say, "This is the house you want. Okay, we're going to give you the money. You buy the house, and now you pay us more. You pay us a higher price." That's not allowed. That's riba. That's profiting from loans.
Okay.
What the bank has to do, they buy the house
for 100,000 and then sell it for 125 to me.
For whatever
if I agree.
Whatever you agree.
Yeah. 150, 1200.
You walk away, you walk away.
Yeah, almost. So yeah.
But if you promise them, if you buy the house, I'll buy it for you, you should keep your promise. That's general. But you're not bound by contractual. So the way it works is now we're two buyer and seller, equal parties in a business contract. We can negotiate more or less, whatever the price. And fix the price.
Is that all?